Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. Today we're going to be taking a look at a case that really highlights what happens when a deal goes bad. We're talking about Cosden v. Helm and how it shines a light on the Uniform Commercial Code, and especially how it deals with broken contracts when the market for goods is just going crazy.
Yeah, Cosden v. Helm is really fascinating because it's not just some, you know, abstract legal precedent. It's a story with real-world consequences. So imagine you've got this deal in place for something really important, and the price is skyrocketing, and all of a sudden the seller just says, nope, can't deliver. What do you do? And what happens next? Well, that's the exact problem that's at the heart of this case.
So set the stage for us. Who are the players in this case, and what's this all-important product that they're fighting over?
All right, so we've got Cosden Oil and Chemical Company, they're the seller, and then there's Carl O. Helm Aktiengesellschaft, the buyer, and the year is 1979, and the product that everyone's going crazy for is polystyrene, you know, the stuff that they use to make, like, disposable coffee cups and packing peanuts, and the price of polystyrene, it was just going through the roof. Helm was looking to buy a huge amount of it. They placed four separate orders with Cosden.
So it sounds like Helm was trying to stay ahead of the game, anticipating shortages, and maybe even thinking they could make a profit in this wild market, but things didn't quite go according to plan, right?
Cosden started having all these production issues at their plants, which led to canceled orders and a whole bunch of legal trouble. So the big legal question that comes up is, when do you calculate the damages for Helm, who was basically left hanging? Do you look at the price of polystyrene when Cosden first bailed? Or do you consider the price at the time Helm was supposed to actually get those goods? That's where things get really interesting.
So this is where the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC, comes in, right? It sounds like there are a few conflicting parts of it that make things pretty complicated.
Exactly. The UCC basically governs how goods are sold in the U.S. And in this case, you've got several sections that seem to point in different directions when it comes to figuring out damages. So there's section 2713, which says you should measure damages when the buyer finds out about the breach. But then you've got section 2610, which lets the buyer wait for what they call a commercially reasonable time after the seller breaks the contract before they have to do anything.
So you've got these two sections that seem to be saying different things.
Yeah.
What did the courts do with this? How did they decide whose side to take, Cosden's or Helm's?
Well, this case went on a bit of a journey through the courts first. The district court decided to go with the idea of a commercially reasonable time after the breach. So they said, you need to look at the market price sometime within that window after Cosden backed out of the deal.
I bet that didn't make both sides happy.
Not a chance. Cosden naturally wanted the damages to be calculated as soon as possible to keep their payout low. And Helm, on the other hand, wanted a later date closer to when they were supposed to receive the goods, when the prices were probably even higher. Both sides appealed, and the case ended up in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Wow. The Fifth Circuit. That's a big deal. So what was their decision? Did they stick with the commercially reasonable time idea?
They did, but there's a twist. The Fifth Circuit mostly agreed with what the district court did, but then they sent the case back down, what's called a remand, and it was because of a problem with how Cosden was dividing up its limited supply of polystyrene among its buyers during the shortage, which shows just how even a seemingly simple contract dispute can have hidden layers.
Okay, so we've got this commercially reasonable time concept,
right,
and then we've got this allocation issue that just makes things even more complex.
That's getting good.
So let's get back into it and really unpack the Fifth Circuit's reasoning in Cosden v. Helm. They had quite a task trying to reconcile those UCC sections about damages. Yeah, it sounds like a real legal puzzle. How did they even start to make sense of it all?
Well, the court laid out a pretty clear three-step process for bringing those seemingly contradictory provisions together. They started with Section 2610, which gives the wronged party, you know, in this case Helm, the right to wait for a commercially reasonable amount of time before taking action, which kind of suggests that damages can be calculated during that waiting period, especially when you've got a rising market like we did here.
So if the court had just gone with the price at the exact moment Cosden backed out, that wouldn't have been fair to Helm, right?
You got it. If they had just gone with Cosden's argument and said the damages should be calculated right when they repudiated the contract, it would have basically ignored what Section 2610 is trying to do.
Yeah,
it might even encourage sellers to back out of deals early, knowing they could avoid bigger damages down the line.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about Helm's argument? They wanted the damages calculated based on the price when they were supposed to get the goods. Why didn't the court go for that?
Well, the court thought about that too, but they realized that if they went with Helm's approach, it would make sections 2610 and 2712 practically meaningless. And remember, section 2712 is all about the buyer's right to cover, to find substitute goods after a breach.
So it sounds like the court was trying to find a balance. Mm-hmm. They wanted to give buyers like Helm some time to figure out their options, but they didn't want to let them take advantage of a market that's going crazy.
Exactly. And what the Fifth Circuit ended up doing was deciding that the phrase learned of the breach in Section 2713 should actually be interpreted as meaning the end of that commercially reasonable waiting period from Section 2610. So by linking the calculation of damages to the end of that waiting period, they gave buyers a little bit of breathing room to assess their options, like finding those substitute goods without getting penalized for waiting.
So it seems like the idea of a commercially reasonable time is really the key to this whole decision.
Oh, absolutely. The court recognized that, you know, business deals happen in the real world and things aren't always so clear cut. So they decided to go with a case-by-case analysis instead of having strict deadlines. What's considered a commercially reasonable time can change depending on the situation, you know, what kind of goods are involved, what the market is doing, even what the buyer is doing. All of that comes into play.
So if you're someone who deals with contracts, especially in a market that's volatile, what's the takeaway from all this? How can Kozin v. Helm help guide your actions?
This case is like a roadmap for anyone who's dealing with anticipatory repudiation under the UCC. If you're a buyer and the seller breaks the contract, don't just sit around and watch as your potential losses grow. You got to be proactive. Kozin v. Helm tells us to start looking for those substitute goods right away. Keep really good records of your search and document everything that's going on in the market. It all helps strengthen your argument for getting bigger damages later on.
And if you're the seller, you can't just assume that you can limit what you owe by breaking the contract early, especially if the market is hot.
Right. This case really drives home the importance of being clear in your communication, acting in good faith, and really understanding what you're obligated to do under the UCC. It reminds us that contract law isn't just some theory. It's actually happening in the real world of buying and selling.
But we can't forget that the Fifth Circuit sent the case back down to the lower court to deal with that whole allocation issue. What was that about?
It all came down to whether or not Kozin could legitimately say that they couldn't fulfill their contract with Helm because there was a shortage of polystyrene. Could they prove that they had to divide up their limited supply among their different buyers? And if they could, would that change how the damages were calculated? It just adds a whole other level of complexity, doesn't it?
It sure does. This case is like peeling back the layers of an onion every time you think you've got it figured out. There's something else underneath.
Mm.
But it's a great example of how even what seems like a simple contract can have all these hidden complexities.
Absolutely. Kozin v. Helm shows us just how important it is to carefully look at every little detail of a contract and really consider the big picture.
It's pretty amazing how a case from way back in the 1980s can still be so relevant today.
You know what's really striking about Kozin v. Helm is that it set this precedent that's been cited in so many other cases and legal analyses. It really influenced how courts handle those situations where a seller pulls out of a deal and everyone's arguing over damages.
It does feel like a landmark case in a lot of ways.
Right.
So how did Kozin v. Helm actually change things? What kind of impact did it have?
Well, one of the biggest things is that it created a clear structure for figuring out when you're supposed to calculate damages in those anticipatory repudiation cases. You know, like we were talking about before, the court basically said it's not about just picking some random date. It's about what makes sense commercially based on the specific situation.
Right, because every contract is different. Every market has its own little quirks.
Exactly. The Fifth Circuit realized that trying to have some kind of one-size-fits-all rule just wouldn't work. It wouldn't be fair to the buyers who are left scrambling to cover their losses, and it could create opportunities for sellers to kind of take advantage of the system.
So by having this more flexible standard, the court made sure everyone was playing on a level playing field. It gave both buyers and sellers some room to maneuver in the market.
Exactly. It encouraged everyone to act in good faith, communicate clearly, and really consider all their options before running off to court.
And it seems like Kozin v. Helm also really emphasized how important documentation is.
Oh, absolutely. If you're a buyer and a seller breaks the contract, you've got to be super careful about documenting every step you take to find substitute goods, keep track of market prices, any communication with the seller. Basically, anything that can back up your claim for damages and for sellers. Hmm. Well, it's super important to keep detailed records of production, you know, market trends, interactions with buyers, everything.
It all comes back to that old saying, get it in writing.
Pretty much. But it's more than just having a contract. It's about actually understanding how contract law works, being ready for the unexpected, and just acting in a way that makes sense commercially throughout the whole process.
All right, before we wrap things up, let's revisit that thought-provoking question you brought up earlier. You asked us to imagine how this whole case might have gone down if the market for polystyrene had been falling instead of rising.
Exactly. Would the court have still come to the same conclusion about when to calculate damages? Would they have completely flipped things and sided with the seller?
And how would that have changed things for both the buyer and the seller? Would it have discouraged buyers from waiting for a better price because they knew they might not be able to get those higher damages?
It's definitely something to think about, isn't it? Cosin de Vilhelm really shows us how closely connected market dynamics and contract law really are. Prices go up and down, situations change, and the law has to be flexible enough to adapt to all of that.
It's a perfect example of how a single case can have this ripple effect impacting so many others. Cosin de Vilhelm is still shaping how we think about contracts damages and what it really means to act in a commercially reasonable way. So thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We hope you learned some valuable insights into this landmark case and its lasting impact. Until next time.